The Silmarillion by J.R.R. Tolkien. Edited by Christopher Tolkien. Read by Martin Shaw. The Return of the Noldor. It has been told that Feanor and his sons came first of the exiles to Middle-earth and landed in the waste of Lammoth, the Great Echo, upon the outer shores of the Firth of Drengist. And even as the Noldor set foot upon the strand, their cries were taken up into the hills and multiplied, so that a clamor as of countless mighty voices filled all the coasts of the north. And the noise of the burning of the ships at Lothgar went down the winds of the sea as a tumult of great wrath, and far away all who heard that sound were filled with wonder. Now the flames of that burning were seen not only by Fingolfin, whom Feanor had deserted in Araman, but also by the orcs and the watchers of Morgoth. No tale has told what Morgoth thought in his heart at the tidings that Feanor, his bitterest foe, had brought a host out of the west. It may be that he feared him little, for he had as yet no proof of the swords of the Noldor, and soon it was seen that he purposed to drive them back into the sea. Under the cold stars before the rising of the moon, the host of Feanor went up the long firth of Drengist, that pierced the echoing hills of Ered Lomin, and passed thus from the shores into the great land of Hithlum. And they came at length to the long lake of Mithrim, and upon its northern shore made their encampment in that region that bore the same name. But the host of Morgoth, aroused by the tumult of Lammoth and the light of the burning at Lothgar, came through the passes of Ered Wethrin, the Mountains of Shadow, and assailed Feanor on a sudden before his camp was full wrought or put in defence. And there on the grey fields of Mithrim was fought the second battle in the wars of Beleriand. Dagor Nuin Giliath, it is named, the battle under stars, for the moon had not yet risen, and it is renowned in song. The Noldor, outnumbered and taken at unawares, were yet swiftly victorious, for the light of Aman was not yet dimmed in their eyes, and they were strong and swift, and deadly in anger, and their swords were long and terrible. The orcs fled before them, and they were driven forth from Mithrim with great slaughter, and hunted over the Mountains of Shadow into the great plain of Ard Galan, that lay northward of Dorthonion. There the armies of Morgoth that had passed south into the Vale of Sirion and beleaguered Círdan in the havens of the Falas came up to their aid and were caught in their ruin. For Celegorm, Feanor's son, having news of them, waylaid them with a part of the elven host, and coming down upon them out of the hills near Æthel Sirion, drove them into the fen of Serek. Evil indeed were the tidings that came at last to Angband, and Morgoth was dismayed. 10 days that battle lasted, and from it returned of all the hosts that he had prepared for the conquest of Beleriand no more than a handful of leaves. Yet cause he had for great joy, though it was hidden from him for a while, for Feanor, in his wrath against the enemy, would not halt, but pressed on behind the remnant of the orcs, thinking so as to come at Morgoth himself. And he laughed aloud as he wielded his sword, rejoicing that he had dared the wrath of the Valar and the evils of the road, that he might see the hour of his vengeance. Nothing did he know of Angband or the great strength of defence that Morgoth had so swiftly prepared. But even had he known, it would not have deterred him, for he was fey, consumed by the flame of his own wrath. Thus it was that he drew far ahead of the van of his host, and seeing this, the servants of Morgoth turned to bay, and there issued from Angband Balrogs to aid them. There upon the confines of Dor Daedaloth, the land of Morgoth, Feanor was surrounded with few friends about him, Long he fought on, and undismayed, though he was wrapped in fire and wounded with many wounds. But at the last he was smitten to the ground by Gothmog, Lord of Balrogs, whom Echthelion after slew in Gondolin. There he would have perished, had not his sons in that moment come up with force to his aid, and the Balrogs left him and departed to Angband. Then his sons raised up their father and bore him back towards Mithrim. But as they drew near to Aethel Sirion, and were upon the upward path to the pass over the mountains, Feanor bade them halt, for his wounds were mortal, and he knew that his hour was come. And looking out from the slopes of Ered-Wethrin, with his last sight, he beheld far off the peaks of Thangorodrim, mightiest of the towers of Middle-earth, and knew with the foreknowledge of death that no power of the Noldor would ever overthrow them. But he cursed the name of Morgoth thrice, and laid it upon his sons to hold to their oath and to avenge their father. Then he died. But he had neither burial nor tomb, for so fiery was his spirit, that as it sped his body fell to ash, and was borne away like smoke. And his likeness has never again appeared in Arda, neither has his spirit left the halls of Mandos. Thus ended the mightiest of the Noldor, of whose deeds came both their greatest renown and their most grievous woe. Now in Mithrim there dwelt grey elves, folk of Beleriand, that had wandered north over the mountains, and the Noldor met them with gladness, as kinsfolk long sundered. But speech at first was not easy between them, for in their long severance the tongues of the Kalaquendi in Valinor and of the Moraquendi in Beleriand had drawn far apart. From the elves of Mithrim, the Noldor learned of the power of Elu Thingol, king in Doriath, and the girdle of enchantment that fenced his realm. And tidings of these great deeds in the north came south to Menegroth, and to the havens of Brith Umbar and Eglarest. Then all the elves of Beleriand were filled with wonder and with hope at the coming of their mighty kindred, who thus returned unlooked for from the west in the very hour of their need, believing indeed at first that they came as emissaries of the Valar to deliver them. But even in the hour of the death of Feanor, an embassy came to his sons from Morgoth, acknowledging defeat and offering terms even to the surrender of a Silmaril. Then Maedhros the Tall, the eldest son, persuaded his brothers to feign to treat with Morgoth, and to meet his emissaries at the place appointed. But the Noldor had as little thought of faith as had he. Wherefore, each embassy came with greater force than was agreed. But Morgoth sent them more, and they were Balrogs. Maedhros was ambushed, and all his company was slain, but he himself was taken alive by the command of Morgoth, and brought to Angband. Then the brothers of Maedhros drew back and fortified a great camp in Hithlum. But Morgoth held Maedhros as hostage, and sent word that he would not release him unless the Noldor would forsake their war, returning into the west, or else departing far from Beleriand into the south of the world. But the sons of Feanor knew that Morgoth would betray them, and would not release Maedhros, whatsoever they might do. And they were constrained also by their oath, and might not for any cause forsake the war against their enemy. Therefore Morgoth took Maedhros, and hung him from the face of a precipice upon Thangorodrim, and he was caught to the rock by the wrist of his right hand in a band of steel. Now rumour came to the camp in Hithlum of the march of Fingolfin and those that followed him, who had crossed the grinding ice, and all the world lay then in wonder at the coming of the moon. But as the host of Fingolfin marched into Mithrim, the sun rose flaming in the west, and Fingolfin unfurled his blue and silver banners, and blew his horns, and flowers sprang beneath his marching feet, and the ages of the stars were ended. At the uprising of the great light, the servants of Morgoth fled into Angband, and Fingolfin passed unopposed through the fastness of Dor Daedaloth, while his foes hid beneath the earth. Then the elves smote upon the gates of Angband, and the challenge of their trumpets shook the towers of Thangorodrim. And Maedhros heard them, amid his torment, and cried aloud, but his voice was lost in the echoes of the stone. But Fingolfin, being of other temper than Feanor, and wary of the wiles of Morgoth, withdrew from Dor Daedaloth, and turned back towards Mithrim, for he had heard tidings that there he should find the sons of Feanor, and he desired also to have the shield of the Mountains of Shadow while his people rested and grew strong. For he had seen the strength of Angband, and thought not that it would fall to the sound of trumpets only. Therefore, coming at length to Hithlum, he made his first camp and dwellings by the northern shores of Lake Mithrim. No love was there in the hearts of those that followed Fingolfin for the house of Feanor, for the agony of those that endured the crossing of the ice had been great, and Fingolfin held the sons the accomplices of their father. Then there was peril of strife between the hosts. But grievous as were their losses upon the road, the people of Fingolfin and of Finrod, son the Finarfin, were still more numerous than the followers of Feanor, and these now withdrew before them and removed their dwelling to the southern shore. And the lake lay between them. Many of Feanor's people indeed repented of the burning at Losgar, and were filled with amazement at the valour that had brought the friends whom they had abandoned over the ice of the north. And they would have welcomed them, but they dared not for shame. Thus, because of the curse that lay upon them, the Noldor achieved nothing, while Morgoth hesitated, and the dread of light was new and strong upon the orcs. But Morgoth arose from thought, and seeing the division of his foes, he laughed. In the pits of Angband he caused vast smokes and vapours to be made, and they came forth from the reeking tops of the Iron Mountains, and afar off they could be seen in Mithrim, staining the bright airs in the first mornings of the world. A wind came out of the east and bore them over Hithlum, darkening the new sun, and they fell and coiled about the fields and hollows and lay upon the waters of Mithrim, drear and poisonous. Then Fingon the Valiant, son of Fingolfin, resolved to heal the feud that divided the Noldor, before the enemy should be ready for war. For the earth trembled in the northlands with the thunder of the forges of Morgoth underground. Long before, in the bliss of Valinor, before Melkor was unchained, or lies came between them, Fingon had been close in friendship with Maedhros. And though he knew not yet that Maedhros had not forgotten him at the burning of the ships, the thought of their ancient friendship stung his heart. Therefore he dared a deed which is justly renowned among the feats of the princes of the Noldor. Alone, and without the counsel of any, he set forth in search of Maedhros. And aided by the very darkness that Morgoth had made, he came unseen to the fastness of his foes. High upon the shoulders of Thangorodrim he climbed, and looked in despair upon the desolation of the land. But no passage or crevice could he find through which he might come within Morgoth's stronghold. Then, in defiance of the orcs, who cowered still in the dark vaults beneath the earth, he took his harp and sang a song of Valinor that the Noldor made of old before strife was born among the sons of Finwë. And his voice rang in the mournful hollows that had never heard before aught save cries of fear and woe. Thus Fingon found what he sought. For suddenly above him far and faint his song was taken up, and a voice answering called to him. Maedhros it was that sang amid his torment. But Fingon climbed to the foot of the precipice where his kinsman hung, and then could go no further, and he wept when he saw the cruel device of Morgoth. Maedhros, therefore, being in anguish without hope, begged Fingon to shoot him with his bow. And Fingon strung an arrow and bent his bow, and seeing no better hope, he cried to Manwë, saying, O king to whom all birds are dear, speed now this feathered shaft and recall some pity for the Noldor in their need. His prayer was answered swiftly. For Manwë, to whom all birds are dear, and to whom they bring news upon Taniquetil from Middle-earth, had sent forth the race of eagles, commanding them to dwell in the crags of the north and to keep watch upon Morgoth. For Manwë still had pity for the exiled elves. And the eagles brought news of much that passed in those days to the sad ears of Manwë. Now, even as Fingon bent his bow, there flew down from the high airs Thorondor, king of eagles, mightiest of all birds that have ever been, whose outstretched wings spanned 30 fathoms. And staying Fingon's hand, he took him up and bore him to the face of the rock where Maedhros hung. But Fingon could not release the hell-wrought bond upon his wrist, nor sever it, nor draw it from the stone. Again, therefore, in his pain, Maedhros begged that he would slay him. But Fingon cut off his hand above the wrist, and Thorondor bore them back to Mithrim. There Maedhros in time was healed, for the fire of life was hot within him, and his strength was of the ancient world, such as those possessed who were nurtured in Valinor. His body recovered from his torment and became hale, but the shadow of his pain was in his heart, and he lived to wield his sword with left hand more deadly than his right had been. By this deed Fingon won great renown, and all the Noldor praised him, and the hatred between the houses of Fingolfin and Feanor was assuaged. For Maedhros begged forgiveness for the desertion in Araman, and he waived his claim to kingship over all the Noldor, saying to Fingolfin, "If there lay no grievance between us, Lord, still the kingship would rightly come to you, the eldest here of the house of Finwë, and not the least wise." But to this his brothers did not all in their hearts agree. Therefore, even as Mandos foretold, the house of Feanor were called the Dispossessed, because the overlordship passed from it, the elder, to the house of Fingolfin, both in Ilenda and in Beleriand, and because also of the loss of the Silmarils. But the Noldor, being again united, set a watch upon the borders of Dor Daedaloth, and Angband was beleaguered from west and south and east. And they sent forth messengers far and wide to explore the countries of Beleriand, and to treat with the people that dwelt there. Now King Thingol welcomed not with a full heart the coming of so many princes in might out of the west, eager for new realms. And he would not open his kingdom, nor remove its girdle of enchantment, for wise with the wisdom of Melian he trusted not that the restraint of Morgoth would endure. Alone of the princes of the Noldor, those of Finarfin's house were suffered to pass within the confines of Doriath, for they could claim close kinship with King Thingol himself, since their mother was Eärwyn of Alqualondë, Olwë's daughter. Angrod, son of Finarfin, was the first of the exiles to come to Menegroth as messenger of his brother Finrod, and he spoke long with the king, telling him of the deeds of the Noldor in the north, and of their numbers, and of the ordering of their force. But being true and wise-hearted, and thinking all griefs now forgiven, he spoke no word concerning the kinslaying, nor of the manner of the exile of the Noldor and the oath of Feanor. King Thingol hearkened to the words of Angrod, and ere he went he said to him, "Thus shall you speak for me to those that sent you. In Hithlum the Noldor have leave to dwell, and in the highlands of Dothonion, and in the lands east of Doriath that are empty and wild. But elsewhere there are many of my people, and I would not have them restrained of their freedom, still less ousted from their homes. Beware, therefore, how you princes of the west bear yourselves, for I am the lord of Beleriand, and all who seek to dwell there shall hear my word. Into Doriath none shall come to abide, but only such as I call as guests, or who seek me in great need." Now the lords of the Noldor held council in Mithrim, and thither came Angrod out of Doriath, bearing the message of King Thingol. Cold seemed its welcome to the Noldor, and the sons of Feanor were angered at the words. But Maedhros laughed, saying, A king is he that can hold his own, or else his title is vain. Thingol does but grant us lands where his power does not run. Indeed, Doriath alone would be his realm this day, but for the coming of the Noldor. Therefore in Doriath let him reign, and be glad that he has the sons of Finwë for his neighbours, not the orcs of Morgoth that we found. Elsewhere it shall go as seems good to us. But Carinthia, who loved not the sons of Finarfin, and was the harshest of the brothers and the most quick to anger, cried aloud, "Yea, more! Let not the sons of Finarfin run hither and thither with their tails to this dark elf in his caves. Who made them our spokesman to deal with him? And though they may become indeed to Beleriand, and let them not so swiftly forget their father is a lord of the Noldor, though their mother be of other kin." Then Angrod was wrathful, and went forth from the council. Maedhros, indeed, rebuked Carinthia, but the greater part of the Noldor, of both followings, hearing his words, were troubled in heart, fearing the fell spirit of the sons of Feanor, that it seemed would ever be like to burst forth in rash word or violence. But Maedhros restrained his brothers, and they departed from the council, and soon afterwards they left Mithrim and went eastward beyond Aros to the wide lands about the hill of Himring. That region was named thereafter the March of Maedhros, for northwards there was little defence of hill or river against assault from Angband. There Maedhros and his brothers kept watch, gathering all such people as would come to them, and they had few dealings with their kinsfolk westward, save at need. It is said, indeed, that Maedhros himself devised this plan to lessen the chances of strife, and because he was very willing that the chief peril of assault should fall upon himself. And he remained, for his part, in friendship with the houses of Fingolfin and Finarfin, and would come among them at times for common counsel. Yet he also was bound by the oath, though it slept now for a time. Now the people of Carinthia dwelt furthest east beyond the upper waters of Gelion, about Lake Hellevorn under Mount Rerir, and to the southward. And they climbed the heights of Ered Luin, and looked eastward in wonder, for wild and wide it seemed to them were the lands of Middle-earth. And thus it was that Carinthia's people came upon the dwarves, who, after the onslaught of Morgoth and the coming of the Noldor, had ceased their traffic into Beleriand. But though either people loved skill and were eager to learn, no great love was there between them, for the dwarves were secret and quick to resentment, and Carinthia was haughty and scarce concealed his scorn for the unloveliness of the Naugrim, and his people followed their lord. Nevertheless, since both peoples feared and hated Morgoth, they made alliance, and had of it great profit. For the Naugrim learned many secrets of craft in those days, so that the smiths and masons of Nogrod and Belagost became renowned among their kin, and when the dwarves began again to journey into Beleriand, all the traffic of the dwarf mines passed first through the hands of Carinthia, and thus great riches came to him. When 20 years of the sun had passed, Fingolfin, king of the Noldor, made a great feast, and it was held in the spring near to the pools of Ivrin, whence the swift river Narog rose. For there the lands were green and fair at the feet of the mountains of shadow that shielded them from the north. The joy of that feast was long remembered in later days of sorrow, and it was called Mereth Adathad, the Feast of Reuniting. Thither came many of the chieftains and people of Fingolfin and Finrod, and of the sons of Feanor, Maedhros and Maglor, with warriors of the Eastern March, and there came also great numbers of the Grey Elves, wanderers of the woods of Beleriand, and folk of the Havens, with Círdan their lord. There came even Green Elves from Osiriand, the land of Seven Rivers, far off under the walls of the Blue Mountains. But out of Doriath there came but 2 messengers, Mablung and Daeron, bearing greetings from the king. At Mereth Adarthad many counsels were taken in goodwill, and oaths were sworn of league and friendship, And it is told that at this feast the tongue of the grey elves was most spoken even by the Noldor, for they learned swiftly the speech of Beleriand, whereas the Sindar was slow to master the tongue of Valinor. The hearts of the Noldor were high and full of hope, and to many among them it seemed that the words of Feanor had been justified, bidding them to seek freedom and fair kingdoms in Middle-earth. And indeed, there followed after long years of peace, while their swords fenced Beleriand from the ruin of Morgoth, and his power was shut behind his gates. In those days there was joy beneath the new sun and moon, and all the land was glad. But still the shadow brooded in the north. And when again 30 years had passed, Turgon, son of Fingolfin, left Nevrast, where he dwelt, and sought out Finrod, his friend, upon the island of Tol Sirion, and they journeyed southward along the river, being weary for a while of the northern mountains. And as they journeyed, night came upon them, beyond the meres of twilight beside the waters of Sirion, and they slept upon his banks beneath the summer stars. But Ulmo, coming up the river, laid a deep sleep upon them and heavy dreams, and the trouble of the dreams remained after they awoke. But neither said aught to the other, for their memory was not clear, and each believed that Ulmo had sent a message to him alone. But unquiet was upon them ever after, and doubt of what should befall, and they wandered often alone in untrodden lands, seeking far and wide for places of hidden strength. For it seemed to each that he was bidden to prepare for a day of evil, and to establish a retreat, lest Morgoth should burst from Angband and overthrow the armies of the north. Now on a time Finrod and Galadriel his sister were the guests of Thingol their kinsman in Doriath. Then Finrod was filled with wonder at the strength and majesty of Menegroth, its treasuries and armories and its many pillared halls of stone. And it came into his heart that he would build wide halls behind ever-guarded gates in some deep and secret place beneath the hills. Therefore he opened his heart to Thingol, telling him of his dreams. And Thingol spoke to him of the deep gorge of the river Narog, and the caves under the high Faroth in its steep western shore. And when he departed, he gave him guides to lead him to that place of which few yet knew. Thus Finrod came to the caverns of Narog, and began to establish there deep halls and armories, after the fashion of the mansions of Menegroth. And that stronghold was called Nargothrond. In that labour Finrod was aided by the dwarves of the Blue Mountains, and they were rewarded well, for Finrod had brought more treasures out of Tirion than any other of the princes of the Noldor, and in that time was made for him the Nauglamir, the necklace of the dwarves, most renowned of their works in the elder days. It was a carcanet of gold, and set therein were gems uncounted from Valinor. But it had a power within it, so that it rested lightly on its wearer as a strand of flax, and whatsoever neck it clasped, it sat always with grace and loveliness. There in Nargothrond, Finrod made his home with many of his people, and he was named in the tongue of the dwarves Felagund, Hewer of Caves, and that name he bore thereafter until his end. But Finrod Felagund was not the first to dwell in the caves beside the river Narog. Galadriel his sister went not with him to Nargothrond, for in Doriath dwelt Celeborn, kinsman of Thingol, and there was great love between them. Therefore she remained in the hidden kingdom and abode with Melian, and of her learned great lore and wisdom concerning Middle-earth. But Turgon remembered the city set upon a hill, Tirion the Fair, with its tower and tree, and he found not what he sought, but returned to Nevrast, and sat in peace in Vinyamar by the shores of the sea. And in the next year Ulmo himself appeared to him, and bade him go forth again alone into the Vale of Sirion. And Turgon went forth, and by the guidance of Ulmo he discovered the hidden vale of Tumladen in the encircling mountains, in the midst of which there was a hill of stone. Of this he spoke to none as yet, but returned once more to Nevrast, and there began in his secret councils to devise the plan of a city after the manner of Tirion upon Tunnar, for which his heart yearned in exile. Now Morgoth, believing the report of his spies that the lords of the Noldor were wandering abroad with little thought of war, made trial of the strength and watchfulness of his enemies. Once more, with little warning, his might was stirred, and suddenly there were earthquakes in the north, and fire came from fissures in the earth, and the iron mountains vomited flame, and orcs poured forth across the plain of Ard Ghalan. Thence they thrust down the pass of Sirion in the west, and in the east they burst through the land of Maglor in the gap between the hills of Maedhros and the outliers of the Blue Mountains. But Fingolfin and Maedhros were not sleeping, and while others sought out the scattered bands of orcs that strayed in Beleriand and did great evil, they came upon the main host from either side as it was assaulting Dathonion. And they defeated the servants of Morgoth, and pursuing them across Ard Ghalan, destroyed them utterly, to the least and last, within sight of Angband's gates. That was the third great battle of the wars of Beleriand, and it was named Dagor Aglareb, the Glorious Battle. A victory it was, and yet a warning, and the princes took heed of it, and thereafter drew closer their leaguer, and strengthened and ordered their watch, setting the siege of Angband, which lasted well nigh 400 years of the sun. For a long time after Dagor Aglareb, no servant of Morgoth would venture from his gates, for they feared the lords of the Noldor. And Fingolfin boasted that save by treason among themselves, Morgoth could never again burst from the leaguer of the Eldar, nor come upon them at unawares. Yet the Noldor could not capture Angband, nor could they regain the Silmarils. And war never wholly ceased in all that time of the siege, for Morgoth devised new evils, and ever and anon he would make trial of his enemies. Nor could the stronghold of Morgoth be ever wholly encircled, for the iron mountains from whose great curving wall the towers of Thangorodrim were thrust forward defended it upon either side, and were impassable to the Noldor, because of their snow and ice. Thus in his rear, and to the north, Morgoth had no foes, and by that way his spies at times went out, and came by devious routes into Beleriand. And desiring above all to sow fear and disunion among the Eldar, he commanded the orcs to take alive any of them that they could, and bring them bound to Angband. And some he so daunted by the terror of his eyes that they needed no chains more, but walked ever in fear of him, doing his will wherever they might be. Thus Morgoth learned much of all that had befallen since the rebellion of Feanor, and he rejoiced, seeing therein the seed of many dissensions among his foes. When nearly 100 years had run since the Dagor Aglareb, Morgoth endeavoured to take Fingolfin at unawares, for he knew of the vigilance of Maedhros. And he sent forth an army into the White North, and they turned west and again south, and came down the coasts to the Firth of Drengist, by the route that Fingolfin followed from the grinding ice. Thus they would enter into the realm of Hithlum from the west, but they were espied in time, and Fingon fell upon them among the hills at the head of the Firth, and most of the orcs were driven into the sea. This was not reckoned among the great battles, for the orcs were not in great number, and only a part of the people of Hithlum fought there. But thereafter there was peace for many years, and no open assault from Angband. For Morgoth perceived now that the orcs unaided were no match for the Noldor, and he sought in his heart for new counsel. Again, after 100 years, Glaurung, the first of the Uruloki, the fire drakes of the north, issued from Angband's gates by night. He was yet young and scarce half grown, for long and slow is the life of the dragons, but the elves fled before him to Eredwethryn, and Dothonion in dismay. And he defiled the fields of Ard Ghalan. Then Fingon, Prince of Hithlum, rode against him with archers on horseback and hemmed him round with a ring of swift riders. And Glaurung could not endure their darts, being not yet come to his full armoury, and he fled back to Angbang, and came not forth again for many years. Fingon won great praise, and the Noldor rejoiced, for few foresaw the full meaning and threat of this new thing. But Morgoth was ill-pleased that Glaurung had disclosed himself over soon, and after his defeat there was the long peace of well-nigh 200 years. In all that time there were but affrays on the marches, and all Beleriand prospered and grew rich. Behind the guard of their armies in the north, the Noldor built their dwellings and their towers, and many fair things they made in those days, and poems and histories and books of lore. In many parts of the land, the Noldor and the Sindar became welded into one people and spoke the same tongue. Though this difference remained between them, the Noldor had the greater power of mind and body, and were the mightier warriors and sages, and they built with stone and loved the hill slopes and open lands. But the Sindar had the fairer voices and were more skilled in music, save only Maglor, son of Feanor, and they loved the woods and the riversides. And some of the grey elves still wandered far and wide without settled abode, and they sang as they went. Of Beleriand and its realms. This is the fashion of the lands into which the Noldor came in the north of the western regions of Middle-earth in the ancient days. And here also is told of the manner in which the chieftains of the Eldar held their lands and the leaguer upon Morgoth after the Dagor Aglareb, the third battle in the wars of Beleriand. In the north of the world, Melkor had in the ages past reared Ered Engrin, the Iron Mountains, as a fence to his citadel of Utumno. And they stood upon the borders of the region of everlasting cold, in a great curve from east to west. Behind the walls of Ered Engrin in the west, where they bent back northwards, Melkor built another fortress as a defence against assault that might come from Valinor. And when he came back to Middle-earth, as has been told, he took up his abode in the endless dungeons of Angband, the Hells of Iron. For in the War of the Powers, the Valar, in their haste to overthrow him in his great stronghold of Utumno, did not wholly destroy Angbang, nor search out all its deep places. Beneath Ered Engrin, he made a great tunnel, which issued south of the mountains, and there he made a mighty gate. But above this gate, and behind it even to the mountains, he piled the thunderous towers of Thangorodrim, that were made of the ash and slag of his subterranean furnaces, and the vast refuse of his tunnelings. They were black and desolate, and exceedingly lofty, and smoke issued from their tops dark and foul upon the northern sky. Before the gates of Angband, filth and desolation spread southward for many miles over the wide plain of Ard Galen. But after the coming of the sun, rich grass arose there, and while Angband was besieged and its gates shut, there were green things even among the pits and broken rocks before the doors of hell. To the west of Thangorodrim lay Hissilome, the land of mist, for so it was named by the Noldor in their own tongue because of the clouds that Morgoth sent thither during their first encampment. Hithlum it became in the tongue of the Sindar that dwelt in those regions. It was a fair land while the siege of Angband lasted, although its air was cool and winter there was cold. In the west it was bounded by Ered Lomin, the echoing mountains that marched near the sea, and in the east and south by the great curve of Ered Wethrin, the shadowy mountains that looked across Ard Galen and the Vale of Sirion. Fingolfin and Fingon his son held Hithlum, and the most part of Fingolfin's folk dwelt in Mithrim about the shores of the great lake. To Fingon was assigned Dorlomin, that lay to the west of the mountains of Mithrim. But their chief fortress was at Aethel Sirion, in the east of Ered Wethrim. whence they kept watch upon Ard Galen. And their cavalry rode upon that plain even to the shadow of Thangorodrim, for from few their horses had increased swiftly, and the grass of Ard Galen was rich and green. Of those horses, many of the sires came from Valinor, and they were given to Fingolfin by Maethros, in atonement of his losses, for they had been carried by ship to Loscar. West of Dor Lomin, beyond the echoing mountains which south of the Firth of Drengist marched inland, lay Nevrast, that signifies the hither shore in the Sindarin tongue. That name was given at first to all the coastlands south of the Firth, but afterwards only to the land whose shores lay between Drengist and Mount Taras. There for many years was the realm of Turgon the Wise, son of Fingolfin, bounded by the sea and by Ered Lomin, and by the hills which continued the walls of Ered Wethrin westward, from Ivrin to Mount Taras, which stood upon a promontory. By some Nevrast was held to belong rather to Beleriand than to Hithlum, for it was a milder land, watered by the wet winds from the sea, and sheltered from the cold north winds that blew over Hithlum. It was a hollow land, surrounded by mountains and great coast cliffs higher than the plains behind, and no river flowed thence. And there was a great mere in the midst of Nevrast, with no certain shores, being encircled by wide marshes. Linewen was the name of that mere, because of the multitude of birds that dwelt there, of such as love tall reeds and shallow pools. At the coming of the Noldor, many of the grey elves lived in Nevrast near to the coasts, and especially about Mount Taras in the southwest. For to that place Ulmo and Ossa had been wont to come in days of old. All that people took Torgon for their lord, and the mingling of the Noldor and the Sindar came to pass soonest there, and Torgon dwelt long in those halls that he named Vinyamar, under Mount Taras beside the sea. South of Ard Galen, the great highland named Dorthonion stretched for 60 leagues from west to east. Great pine forests it bore, especially on its northern and western sides. By gentle slopes from the plain it rose to a bleak and lofty land, where lay many tarns at the feet of bare tors, whose heads were higher than the peaks of Ered Wethrin. But southward, where it looked towards Doriath, it fell suddenly in dreadful precipices. From the northern slopes of Dorthonion, Angrod and Aegnor, sons of Finarfin, looked out over the fields of Ard Galen, and were the vassals of their brother Finrod, lord of Nargothrond. Their people were few, for the land was barren, and the great highlands behind were deemed to be a bulwark that Morgoth would not likely seek to cross. Between Dorthonion and the shadowy mountains there was a narrow vale, whose sheer walls were clad with pines, but the vale itself was green, for the river Sirion flowed through it, hastening towards Beleriand. Finrod held the pass of Sirion, and upon the isle of Tol Sirion, in the midst of the river, he built a mighty watchtower, Minas Tirith. But after Nargothrond was made, he committed that fortress mostly to the keeping of Orodreth, his brother. Now the great and fair country of Beleriand lay on either side of the mighty river Sirion, renowned in song, which rose at Eithal Sirion, and skirted the edge of Ard Galen ere he plunged through the pass, becoming ever fuller with the streams of the mountains. Thence he flowed south for 130 leagues, gathering the waters of many tributaries, until with a mighty flood he reached his many mouths and sandy delta in the Bay of Balar. And following Sirion from north to south, there lay upon the right hand in West Beleriand the forest of Brethil between Sirion and Teiglin, and then the realm of Nargothrond between Teiglin and Narog. And the river Narog rose in the falls of Ivrin in the southern face of Dor Lomin, and flowed some 80 leagues ere he joined Sirion in Nan Tathrin, the land of willows. South of Nan Tathrin was a region of meads filled with many flowers, where few folk dwelt. And beyond lay the marshes and isles of reed about the mouths of Sirion, and the sands of his delta empty of all living things save birds of the sea. But the realm of Nargothrond extended also west of Narog to the river Nenning, that reached the sea at Eglarest, and Finrod became the overlord of all the elves of Beleriand between Sirion and the sea, save only in the Falas. There dwelt those of the Sindar who still loved ships, and Círdan the shipbuilder was their lord. But between Círdan and Finrod there was friendship and alliance, and with the aid of the Noldor, the havens of Brithombar and Eglarest were built anew. Behind their great walls they became fair towns and harbours with quays and piers of stone. Upon the cape west of Eglarest, Finrod raised the tower of Barad Nimras to watch the western sea, though needlessly as it proved, for at no time ever did Morgoth essay to build ships or to make war by sea. Water all his servants shunned, and to the sea none would willingly go nigh, save in dire need. With the aid of the elves of the havens, some of the folk of Nargothrond built new ships, and they went forth and explored the great isle of Balar, thinking there to prepare a last refuge if evil came. But it was not their fate that they should ever dwell there. Thus the realm of Finrod was the greatest by far, though he was the youngest of the great lords of the Noldor, Fingolfin, Fingon, and Maedhros, and Finrod Felagund. But Fingolfin was held overlord of all the Noldor, and Fingon after him, though their own realm was but the northern land of Hithlum. Yet their people were the most hardy and valiant, most feared by the orcs, and most hated by Morgoth. Upon the left hand of Sirion lay East Beleriand, at its widest 100 leagues from Sirion to Gelion, and the borders of Osiriand. And first, between Sirion and Mindeb, lay the empty land of Dimbar, under the peaks of the Chrysagrim, abode of eagles. Between Mindeb and the upper waters of Esgalduin lay the no-land of Nan Dungortheb. And that region was filled with fear, for upon its one side the power of Melian fenced the north march of Doriath, but on the other side the sheer precipices of Ered Gorgoroth, mountains of terror, fell down from high Dothonion. Thither, as was earlier told, Ungoliant had fled from the whips of the Balrogs, and there she dwelt a while, filling the ravines with her deadly gloom. And there still, when she had passed away, her foul offspring lurked and wove their evil nets, and the thin waters that spilled from Ered Gorgoroth were defiled and perilous to drink, for the hearts of those that tasted them were filled with shadows of madness and despair. All living things else shunned that land, and the Noldor would pass through Nan Dungortheb only at great need, by paths near to the borders of Doriath, and furthest from the haunted hills. That way was made long before, in the time ere Morgoth returned to Middle-earth. And if one fared upon it, he came eastwards to Esgalduin, where still there stood, in the days of the siege, the stone bridge of Iant Iawr. Thence he passed through Dor Dinan, the silent land, and crossing the Arosiach, which signifies the fords of Aros, came to the north marches of Beleriand, where dwelt the sons of Feanor. Southward lay the guarded woods of Doriath, abode of Thingol, the hidden king, into whose realm none passed save by his will. Its northern and lesser part, the forest of Neldoreth, was bounded east and south by the dark river Esgalduin, which bent westward in the midst of the land, and between Aros and Esgalduin lay the denser and greater woods of Regian. Upon the southern bank of Esgalduin, where it turned westward towards Sirion, were the caves of Menegroth, and all Doriath lay east of Sirion, save for a narrow region of woodland between the meeting of Teiglin and Sirion, and the meres of twilight. By the people of Doriath, this wood was called Nivrim, the West March. Great oak trees grew there, and it also was encompassed within the girdle of Melian. That so some portion of Sirion, which she loved in reverence of Ulmo, should be wholly under the power of Thingol. In the southwest of Doriath, where Aros flowed into Sirion, lay great pools and marshes on either side of the river, which halted there in his course and strayed in many channels. That region was named Aelin Uial, the Twilight Meres, for they were wrapped in mists, and the enchantment of Doriath lay over them. Now all the northern part of Beleriand sloped southward to this point, and then for a while was plain, and the flood of Sirion was stayed. But south of Aelin Uiel the land fell suddenly and steeply, and all the lower fields of Sirion were divided from the upper fields by this fall, which to one looking from the south northward appeared as an endless chain of hills running from Eglarest beyond Narog in the west to Ammon Ereb in the east within far sight of Gelion. Narog came through these hills in a deep gorge and flowed over rapids, but had no fall, and on its western bank the land rose into the great wooded highlands of Tauren Faroth. On the west side of this gorge, where the short and foaming stream Ringwill tumbled headlong into Narog from the high Faroth, Finrod established Nargothrond. But some 25 leagues east of the gorge of Nargothrond, Sirion fell from the north in a mighty fall below the meres, and then he plunged suddenly underground into great tunnels that the weight of his falling waters delved. And he issued again 3 leagues southward with great noise and smoke through rocky arches at the foot of the hills, which were called the Gates of Sirion. This dividing fall was named Andram, the Long Wall, from Nargothrond to Ramdal, the Wall's End, in East Beleriand. But in the east it became ever less sheer, for the Vale of Gelion sloped steadily southward, and Gelion had neither fall nor rapids throughout his course, but was ever swifter than was Sirion. Between Ramdal and Gelion there stood a single hill of great extent and gentle slopes, but seeming mightier than it was, for it stood alone. And that hill was named Ammon Ereb. Upon Ammon Ereb died Denethor, lord of the Nandor, that dwelt in Osiriand, who marched to the aid of Thingol against Morgoth in those days when the orcs first came down in force and broke the starlit peace of Beleriand. And upon that hill Maedhros dwelt after the great defeat. But south of the Andram, between Sirion and Gelion, was a wild land of tangled forest in which no folk went, save here and there a few dark elves wandering. Tower Im Dwinath, it was named, the forest between the rivers. Gelion was a great river, and he rose in 2 sources, and had at first 2 branches. Little Gelion that came from the hill of Himring, and greater Gelion that came from Mount Rerir. From the meeting of his arms, he flowed south for 40 leagues before he found his tributaries, and before he found the sea he was twice as long as Sirion, though less wide and full. For more rain fell in Hithlum and Dorthonion when Sirion drew his waters than in the east. From Ered Luin flowed the 6 tributaries of Gelion: Askar, that was after named Rathloriel, Thalos, Legolin, Brilthor, Dwilwen, and Adurant, swift and turbulent streams falling steeply from the mountains. And between Askar in the north and Adurant in the south, and between Gelion and Ered Luin, lay the far green country of Osiriand, the land of 7 rivers. Now at a point nearly midway in its course, the stream of Adurant divided and then joined again, and the island that its waters enclosed was named Tol Galen, the Green Isle. There Beren and Luthien dwelt after their return. In Osiriand dwelt the Green Elves in the protection of their rivers. For after Sirion, Ulmo loved Gellion above all the waters of the western world. The woodcraft of the elves of Osiriand was such that a stranger might pass through their land from end to end and see none of them. They were clad in green in spring and summer, and the sound of their singing could be heard even across the waters of Gellion. Wherefore the Noldor named that country Lindon, the land of music, and the mountains beyond they named Ered Lindon, for they first saw them from Osiriand. East of Dothonion, the marches of Beleriand were most open to attack, and only hills of no great height guarded the vale of Gellion from the north. In that region, upon the march of Maedhros, and in the lands behind, dwelt the sons of Feanor with many people, and their riders passed often over the vast northern plain, Lothlan the wide and empty, east of Ard Garlan, lest Morgoth should attempt any sortie towards East Beleriand. The chief citadel of Maedhros was upon the hill of Himring, the Ever-Cold, and that was wide-shouldered, bare of trees, and flat upon its summit, surrounded by many lesser hills. Between Himring and Dorthonion there was a pass exceeding steep upon the west, and that was the pass of Aglon, and was a gate unto Doriath, and a bitter wind blew ever through it from the north. But Celegorm and Curufin fortified Aglon, and held it with great strength, and all the land of Himlad southward, between the river Aros that rose in Dorthonion, and his tributary Kelon that came from Himring. Between the arms of Gellion was the ward of Maglor, and here in one place the hills failed altogether. There it was that the orcs came into East Beleriand before the third battle. Therefore the Noldor held strength of cavalry in the plains at that place, and the people of Carinthia fortified the mountains to the east of Maglor's gap. There Mount Rerir, and about it many lesser heights, stood out from the main range of Ered Lindon westward. And in the angle between Rerir and Ered Lindon there was a lake, shadowed by mountains on all sides save the south. That was Lake Hellevorn, deep and dark, and beside it Carinthia had his abode. But all the great land between Gellion and the mountains, and between Rerir and the river Askar, was called by the Noldor Thargellion, which signifies the land beyond Gellion, or Dor Carinthia, the land of Carinthia. And it was here that the Noldor first met the dwarves. But Thargellion was before called by the grey elves Talath Runan, the East Vale. Thus the sons of Feanor, under Maedhros, were the lords of East Beleriand, but their people were in that time mostly in the north of the land, and southward they rode only to hunt in the greenwoods. But there Amrod and Amras had their abode, and they came seldom northward while the siege lasted. And there also other of the elf lords would ride at times, even from afar, for the land was wild, but very fair. Of these Finrod Felagund came most often, for he had great love of wandering, and he came even into Osiriand, and won the friendship of the green elves. But none of the Noldor went ever over Ered Lindon while their realm lasted, and little news and late came into Beleriand of what passed in the regions of the east. Of the Noldor in Beleriand. It has been told how, by the guidance of Ulmo, Turgon of Nevrast discovered the hidden vale of Tumladen, and that, as was after known, lay east of the upper waters of Sirion, in a ring of mountains tall and sheer, and no living thing came there save the eagles of Thorondor. But there was a deep way under the mountains, delved in the darkness of the world, by waters that flowed out to join the streams of Sirion. And this way Turgon found, and so came to the green plain amid the mountains, and saw the island hill that stood there of hard, smooth stone. For the vale had been a great lake in ancient days. Then Turgon knew that he had found the place of his desire, and he resolved to build there a fair city, a memorial of Tirion upon Tunnar. But he returned to Nevrast and remained there in peace, though he pondered ever in his thought how he should accomplish his design. Now, after the Dagor Aglareb, the unquiet that Ulmo set in his heart returned to him, and he summoned many of the hardiest and most skilled of his people, and led them secretly to the Hidden Vale. And there they began the building of the city that Turgon had devised. And they set a watch all about it, that none might come upon their work from without, and the power of Ulmo that ran in Sirion protected them. But Turgon dwelt still for the most part in Nevrast, until it came to pass that at last the city was full wrought, after 2 and 50 years of secret toil. It is said that Turgon appointed its name to be Ondolinde, in the speech of the elves of Valinor, the rock of the music of water, for there were fountains upon the hill. But in the Sindarin tongue, the name was changed, and it became Gondolin, the hidden rock. Then Turgon prepared to depart from Nevrast and leave his halls in Vinyamar beside the sea. And there Ulmo came to him once again and spoke with him, and he said, "Now thou shalt go at last to Gondolin, Turgon, and I will maintain my power in the Vale of Sirion and in all the waters therein, so that none shall mark thy going, nor shall any find there the hidden entrance against thy will. Longest of all the realms of the Eldalir shall Gondolin stand against Melkor. But love not too well the work of thy hands, and the devices of thy heart, and remember that the true hope of the Noldor lieth in the west, and cometh from the sea." And Ulmo warned Turgon that he also lay under the doom of Mandos, which Ulmo had no power to remove. "Thus it may come to pass," he said, "that the curse of the Noldor shall find thee too ere the end, and treason awake within thy walls. Then they shall be in peril of fire. But if this peril draweth nigh indeed, then even from Nevrast one shall come to warn thee, and from him beyond ruin and fire hope shall be born for elves and men. Leave therefore in this house arms and a sword, that in years to come he may find them, and thus shalt thou know him, and not be deceived." And Ulmo declared to Turgon of what kind and stature should be the helm, and mail, and sword that he left behind. Then Ulmo returned to the sea, and Turgon sent forth all his people, even to a third part of the Noldor, of Fingolfin's following, and a yet greater host of the Sindar. And they passed away, company by company, secretly, under the shadows of Ered Wethrin, and they came unseen to Gondolin, and none knew whither they had gone. And last of all, Turgon arose, and went with his household silently through the hills, and passed the gates in the mountains, and they were shut behind him. Through many long years none passed inward thereafter, save Húrin and Húor only. And the host of Turgon came never forth again until the year of lamentation, after 350 years and more. But behind the circle of the mountains the people of Turgon grew and throve, and they put forth their skill in labour unceasing, so that Gondolin upon Amon Gwareth became fair indeed, and fit to compare even with Elvan Tirion beyond the sea. High and white were its walls, and smooth its stairs, and tall and strong was the tower of the king. There shining fountains played, and in the courts of Turgon stood images of the trees of old, which Turgon himself wrought with elven craft. And the tree which he made of gold was named Glingal, and the tree whose flowers he made of silver was named Belthil. But fairer than all the wonders of Gondolin was Idril, Turgon's daughter, she that was called Celebrindal, the Silverfoot, whose hair was as the gold of Laurelin before the coming of Melkor. Thus Turgon lived long in bliss, but Nevrast was desolate and remained empty of living folk until the ruin of Beleriand. Now, while the city of Gondolin was building in secret, Finrod Felagund wrought in the deep places of Nargothrond. But Galadriel, his sister, dwelt, as has been told, in Thingol's realm in Doriath. And at times Melian and Galadriel would speak together of Valinor and the bliss of old. But beyond the dark hour of the death of the trees, Galadriel would not go, but ever fell silent. And on a time, Melian said, "There is some woe that lies upon you and your kin. That I can see in you, but all else is hidden from me, for by no vision or thought can I perceive anything that passed or passes in the west. A shadow lies over all the land of Ammon, and reaches far out over the sea. Why will you not tell me more?" "For that woe is past," said Galadriel, "and I would take what joy is here left untroubled by memory, and maybe there is woe enough yet to come, though still hope may seem bright." Then Melian looked in her eyes and said, "I believe not that the Noldor came forth as messengers of the Valar, as was said at first, not though they came in the very hour of our need. For they speak never of the Valar, nor have their high lords brought any message to Thingol, whether from Manwë, or Ulmo, or even from Olwë, the king's brother, and his own folk that went over the sea. For what cause, Galadriel, were the high people of the Noldor driven forth as exiles from Ammon? Or what evil lies on the sons of Feanor, that they are so haughty and so fell? Do I not strike near the truth?"
"Near?" said Galadriel.
"Save that we were not driven forth, but came of our own will, and against that of the Valar. And through great peril, and in despite of the Valar, for this purpose we came: to take vengeance upon Morgoth, and regain what he stole." Then Galadriel spoke to Melian of the Silmarils, and of the slaying of King Finwë at Formanos, but still she said no word of the oath, nor of the kinslaying, nor of the burning of the ships at Losgar. But Melian said, "Now much you tell me, and yet more I perceive. A darkness you would cast over the long road from Tirion, but I see evil there, which Thingol should learn for his guidance."
"Maybe," said Galadriel, "but not of me."
And Melian spoke then no more of these matters with Galadriel, but she told to King Thingol all that she had heard of the Silmarils.
"This is a great matter," she said, "greater indeed than the Noldor themselves understand, for the light of Ammon and the fate of Arda lie locked now in these things, the work of Feanor, who is gone. They shall not be recovered, I foretell, by any power of the Eldar, and the world shall be broken in battles that are to come ere they are wrested from Morgoth. See now, Feanor they have slain, and many another, as I guess. But first of all the deaths they have brought, and yet shall bring, was Finwë, your friend. Morgoth slew him ere he fled from Ammon."
Then Thingol was silent, being filled with grief and foreboding. But at length he said, "Now at last I understand the coming of the Noldor out of the west, at which I wondered much before. Not to our aid did they come, save by chance. For those that remain in Middle-earth, the Valar will leave to their own devices until the uttermost need. For vengeance and redress of their loss the Noldor came. Yet all the more sure shall they be as allies against Morgoth, with whom it is not now to be thought that they shall ever make treaty." But Melian said, "Truly for these causes they came, but for others also. Beware of the sons of Feanor. The shadow of the wrath of the Valar lies upon them. And they have done evil, I perceive, both in Ammon and to their own kin. A grief but lulled to sleep lies between the princes of the Noldor." And Thingol answered, "What is that to me? Of Feanor I have heard but report, which makes him great indeed. Of his sons I hear little to my pleasure,
Yet they are likely to prove the deadliest foes of our foe.
Their swords and their counsels shall have two edges, said Melian.
And afterwards they spoke no more of this matter.